And now, a page from the Diary of Flo.
Dear Diary, there's something about protecting people's homes through Progressive that inspires me, because I just had an idea for a book. Well, it was originally an idea for a movie based on a play inspired by a podcast. But the idea is how you can save when you bundle home and auto. Might not be the best idea for a book.
Save an average of 17% on car insurance when you bundle home and auto through Progressive.
Maybe a radio commercial? Guess we'll never know.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Off Top Podcast, otherwise known as the Back to Papa Podcast. Lo, you play NBA Street? Remember Back to Papa? When you chuck it off the backboard and get it right back? I know you know. Lo, man, say what's up to the people.
Another terrible
it was wavy. It was wavy. Come
That's
on.
Another terrible one. But obviously, I know what that is. Obviously. Come on. Let's don't be stupid. I obviously know what it is. But shout out to everybody who listens to the podcast. I'm a podcast people out there. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Off Top Podcast. And I'm Lo. I didn't even say who I was. Yeah, I'm Lo. You know what I'm saying? Legend of winning. Head ass. But let's get into it, man.
If you just, I'm telling you, I keep trying to tell people I'm the main character. A main character wouldn't have to introduce himself, right?
Hey.
I'm just saying, right? Lo, there's a couple hot teams in the NBA right now. Portland is on a 10-game streak.
I'm sorry. We got to talk about your boy Wiggins first. We got to open up with Wiggins.
Yo, you got to cut off the first story?
No. We got to open up with Wiggins. We got to. Because I want to make sure we knock down Wiggins first. So
you got a lot of hate in your heart, man. I just want you.
It's just a fact. So I'll open it up. I'll open it up for you. I'll open it up for people out there who don't know. Recently, it's been reported that Wiggins is whispering. I don't know why he's whispering. He's whispering in his teammate's ear that he doesn't like to be the third option. Now, before I get into it, and before I go in. Because I'm going to go in. Try to defend your man Wiggins. Please do.
Why do you think I'm immediately going to defend him, bro?
You think he's wrong too?
No. See, you're just jumping to sides, bro. It's not binary. I'm just saying that my ability to be objective overrides all my subjective. All
right, then. Let me hear your take on it then. Let me hear what your thoughts on it. Because I know you've thought about it. So let me hear what you got to say.
How you getting played max, but the third option on the team? Yeah, of course he's going to feel like that. I mean, to be fair, there's plenty of things wrong with the Timberwolves. There's plenty of reasons. They should be capitalizing right now. And this shouldn't even be close. They shouldn't even need Jimmy Butler to be able to succeed in the Western Conference because they have that kind of talent around them. And especially because they've gotten those years to develop as a team with the chemistry, they shouldn't have been having all these issues. How you gonna feel some type of way? They give you max money. When they sit you down low and they're like, yeah, we're giving you this money, they look at you and go, you're the future of the franchise. You're not getting max money unless you are. So then to turn around, Jimmy Butler's having a phenomenal year. He takes precedent. Of course, Kat does as well. So you're gonna feel some type of way. You can't be mad at him whether you think like he deserves to feel that way or not, you could definitely look at him and know why he feels that way, Lo. I don't know what you're about to say, but I feel some type of way. You know, if I got paid max, told I was going to be a franchise player, and then next thing you know, they bring in another player, next thing you're third option on a team. That's all I'm saying, Lo. He was drafted first overall. He's not trying to be no third option. Right? Well, plus, he hasn't been playing horribly recently, so I know you're about to go off on it. Wiggins is that and this. He's been shooting pretty efficient the last few weeks, man. Anyway, go for it, Lo. What is your opinion?
Look, man, I understand Wiggins' frustration. Trust me, I do. I'm not trying to really knock on Wiggins and what he has to say.
This is just
a
buffer to say what you really want to say.
I know. I do understand his frustration. I understand you were given the opportunity to sign that contract, and so you may have been influenced one way or another. However, as I'm doing this right now, I'm trying to figure out, because I'm almost 100% sure that Wiggins received that contract after they had traded for Jimmy Butler. Now that I'm looking at it, I believe I am correct, because Jimmy Butler was traded during draft night, and Wiggins didn't receive that contract until October. So Wiggins signed that contract with the idea that Jimmy Butler was going to be there. So let's be clear about that. One, two. Now, don't get me wrong. He may have been convinced that him and Jimmy Butler may play a co-star role on a perimeter. However, Wiggins is at a point in his career where, and I understand you were talking about like he's the first overall pick and XYZ, but I just honestly believe if you believe that you're that great of a player, then just show it. Just show it. Just show people that you can be trusted with being the second or first option on the team. Because the problem is with Wiggins is that over the last 3 years, sure, his scoring output has gone up. However, the team's success hasn't been that much success. And I know people are going to sit here and say, well, they were young and XYZ, man. Embiid and Simmons are in their first, second year in the league.
And that's different. They're in the East. I mean, come on.
It doesn't matter. The Timberwolves were one of the worst teams last year. It'd been one thing if, yeah, you might be able to make that argument if they were kind of straggling and they were barely making the playoffs. Nah, the 76ers are a legit playoff team. And if they were in the West, they would definitely have a better record than what the Timberwolves had last year, which was 31-51. Both Towns and Wiggins have to grow as individuals. However, when it comes to Wiggins, there's very little ground that he has gained in his first 3 to 4 years as a player who was expected to be the next great thing entering the league.
What's up with the NBA community on YouTube? Y'all got this thing, bro. Like, y'all don't really mess with Wiggins at all. Yo, Lo, I can't go a game without somebody going, Wiggins shot this in the first quarter. Unbelievable. What a flop. I'm like, yo, it's the first quarter.
You know why? Because I remember when he first came into the NBA, and God forbid, Wiggins did a fadeaway, and God forbid, Kobe was guarding him, and for a week straight, it was nothing but, oh my goodness, look at Wiggins, and this and that in the third. And let's not also act like when Wiggins first came into the NBA, everyone kept calling him the next Kobe Bryant. There are a few videos on YouTube where people were saying that.
I heard T-Mac
or whoever people were comparing him to, which is outrageous as well. So if you want to make that comparison, and that's all we're going to hear for the first year and a half of your career, then 4 years into your career, you need to start making some type of adjustments and development in your game to become those players. If not, then the same people who were talking about how he's supposed to be the next this or that should be the same people who are saying, wow, Wiggins really hasn't been living up to that type of hype. He's been, to a certain extent, very disappointing. Because regardless of the scoring numbers, and I know those have dipped, and again, you can make an argument because he's now the third option on that team, so I understand that. However, he still should have been able to grow as a player. Defensively, he hasn't grown as much. He's not a facilitator whatsoever. He's not knocking down threes, and he's becoming worse of a free throw shooter. So there is definitely some gripes about Andrew Wiggins growing as an individual. And if you have a concern about your role on a team, like I always say, just become a better player. That's it. Just be better.
That's horrible advice. This is why you never take advice from Lowe. You say,
no, if he can be a third option, I think people would value him as a third option if he worked on some of his weaknesses, because as a third option, he's going to have to shoot threes. As a third option, he's going to have to play some defense. As a third option, he has to understand that he has to be really efficient, or at least more efficient than he is right now, because Towns and Butler are being, the offense is being ran through them. So that doesn't make any sense for him to have 40.
Here's a question.
He's shooting a worse field goal percentage than he has over the last two seasons. That makes no sense.
Nah, but he's doing considerably better now than he did to start the season.
We're talking about five games.
I'm talking about, like, in the last month, in general, he's been doing better. He'll have the off game, and you should never, especially if you're a player like him, have a game where you shoot 14%. That's just ridiculous, right? But I have a question. So a lot of the time, we look at players like Kawhi and Giannis, who are very athletic, and we think athleticism translates to defense, in which a lot of instances it does. But I watch a lot of Raptor games, and I've been paying attention to the Timberwolves because you guys can't stop talking smack about my guy Wiggins. Both athletic players, but they do a horrible job of staying in front of people. I know everyone likes to focus on Wiggins
right now, but
DeRozan is in MVP talks, and he can't guard a soul. He just lets people walk by him, and it happens consistently, Lo. And so it's not always that the athleticism translates to defense. Maybe part of it is like wingspan and more physical features, right? Kawhi and Giannis are examples of people who have insane wingspans. So maybe it's just that you have to be gifted physically to have that type of advantage that those players have to be a consistent guy in the talks for Defensive Player of the Year. But when you look at a guy like Wiggins, man, I think that you're being overly critical of him because of the hype he was getting in his rookie season or before he entered the league. And if this was any other player, if he was drafted 8th or if he was drafted 18th or whatever, this same level of criticism wouldn't be there. And you can make the case that if he was drafted that low, like if he was drafted lower, that he wouldn't have gotten the same level of contract. Would have people have seen him? Like, people said he had a ceiling as high as T-Mac, right? People were like, oh, he could be the next T-Mac. But you're going too crazy on him, bro. Like, that's not the I don't think that's the main issue, and we know that's not the only issue that team is facing. Plus, I think it's a growing year for the team. Last year, that team was playing garbage, low. It's the first year that they're going to be in the playoffs.
Let me cut you off right now.
Nah, because here's the thing,
I'm tired.
You're just going to point to his field goal percentage.
I'm not. Defense. One, what I was going to point to is over the last month, like you say, he's played better than the last month. He's basically put up the exact same stat line. So, I don't know.
It's more variable if you look at it game by game. You can't average everything and get the answers, low. Like, he's having consistent games where he shoots 50, 60%. Then he has an off game against Houston shooting 14. Then he's back to consistent. Then he has an off game shooting 28.
No, that's not, if that was the case, then it would level out to around 50%. He has one game where I'm literally looking at the game log right now. He'll have one game where he's shooting 54%. The next game, 14. The next game after that, 36. The next three games, he's shooting over 50%. The next game is back down to 35%. The next game is 52%. The next game is 28%. It's like I'll give you this. Maybe he's had some really good games where he shot 50% from the field. However, within those great games, he's had ridiculously like 14, 13, 14, 36, 28, 35% games. Now, again, like, he's definitely had games where he's shooting 50%.
Here's the hypocrisy, love. Because you're a Kobe fan, you know. I'm looking at Kobe's, I think this is 05 season.
See, now, here we go again. Don't you even dare.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. Here's the difference. 4 years into Kobe's career, Kobe was already making all defensive teams. 4 years into Kobe Bryant's career, he was averaging.
Right now, I'm not talking about defense. We know Kobe's a much better defender. That's obvious.
Okay, that's the thing. If Wiggins was a better defender, then I would excuse the poor shooting. If Wiggins was a playmaker, I would excuse the poor shooting. That's the reason why, it's a huge reason why I don't really get on DeMar DeRozan so much for his lack of defense, because he's a player who's able to give you 25 plus points.
He wasn't always. But then also
DeMar DeRozan entered the NBA was not expected to be a number one option on the team. He wasn't the first overall pick.
Who, DeRozan?
DeMar DeRozan, his first 2 or 3 years was barely averaging. I don't think he even eclipsed 20 points until like 3 or 4 years into his NBA career.
That doesn't mean he wasn't a first option.
So what was DeMar DeRozan when he first entered the NBA?
Yo, what's Chris Bosh's life? We knew who was it. Andrea Bargnani, low. So stop playing games, man. You're saying that the reason Kobe doesn't get that criticism Wiggins does is because he has defense and excuses this. But you're just making this up so you can fit your narrative of
I'm not making it up. There's things that you allow players to get away with. Curry's not a great defender or on-ball defender, but people allow him to get away with that because how potent of an offensive player he is. There's things you give and go. LeBron is out here averaging almost 5 turnovers a game, but no one brings it up because they understand what he does for that team. It's a give and go. And also, players' numbers translate to wins. These are things that you cannot say about Wiggins. So if you're not a defender, your numbers are not translating to wins.
He can't go to the Cavaliers with Larry Hughes, Zydrunas, and Booby Gibson. You expect that team to win games? Like, that's what I'm saying. Everybody keeping him to such high esteem. Because when he entered the NBA,
that's what I was told. I was told that he was supposed to be the next XYZ player. That's what I was told. And it, like you said earlier, if he was an eighth pick, then he would not have received a max contract. If he was an eighth pick,
here's what I'm saying,
he would understand from the rip that you're not going to be the first option. So there would be an understanding.
I don't want to do this Wiggins again. I just think your criticism is relative. And it shouldn't be. It should be objective, regardless of what hype he's received or how well he's his first year. We're talking about this year here and whether he's performing or underperforming. And a lot of people in their analysis are speaking relatively because they, he was drafted this and he got this hype and so he's ass.
So answer your question. Is he underperforming or overperforming? Or are you performing fine?
I think he's on pace.
To do what, though? To be what? To be what?
To become a really good player in the league. I think he could be an all-star in the league. And I'm sure of that.
So that's what you're capping off at? All-star?
I don't know. I'm not capping him at anything. I just think that's where he will be. Whether he goes higher than that or not is depending on a lot of factors.
Excuse me. Not where you're capping him off. But you're saying at bare minimum, at some point in his career, he can be an all-star. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
Okay. I disagree.
Well,
There's no way in the Western Conference he will be an all-star.
Well, there's blame to go around, man. And I just think that it's unfairly focused on one player when there's multiple issues plaguing that team. And on top of the fact that, give him a break, it's the Timberwolves' first year doing well in the NBA in a while.
I'm not giving no excuses.
I know you're not going to give him a break, but I will. They're not going to win this year regardless, Lo. And so, regardless of what you say or Bob says or John says, this is a developmental year for them. They're getting
It's not. But you go ahead.
It is.
Keep talking.
Because as long as you're not winning the finals, if you can't beat Houston, if you can't beat Golden State, if you can't beat the Raptors, if you can't beat Cleveland or Boston, then it doesn't matter. You just want to get better so that next season you stand a better chance. And I think that the problems they're going through this year is going to lead them to that. Yeah, people are going crazy. Now, if Wiggins comes out next season and stagnates and gets similar statistics, then we can have a serious conversation about whether he can those heights.
I'm not waiting. No, I'm not waiting. No. Yeah, everybody can keep making excuses for these players that literally 3-4 years ago y'all were overhyping. That's fine. But now here we are several seasons later and they stagnated in their career and we're at a point where there's little to no progression as players. When I'm sitting here watching rookies and sophomores come into NBA leading teams, this man Donovan Mitchell, who was not a top 10 pick, is now leading a team to the playoffs after losing their best player. We're looking at literally Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid lead that team to the playoffs. I'm not making excuses. This man is 4 years into his career. I'm not making excuses, bro. This is what you're supposed to do. You were given an opportunity 3 years into your career. We decided that you're not developing enough. You're not a defender that many people expected you to be. And you have the physical traits to become one.
Come on, man.
And
you're still not that.
You're not knocking down threes, which no one really expected him to. But in today's NBA, that's very important. Nor are you playmaking. We're talking about at bare minimum, at the max, we're talking about what you've done so far. It's become a 20-point score. And there's plethora of 20-point scorers that are more efficient than you.
All right. Well, here's the thing, Lo, because what you're doing right now is over criticism. Kyrie Irving at age 21 was doing the exact same thing. In fact, shooting worse percentages, and on top of that, scoring what you just said, Lo, 20 points per game. Oh, but there's so many 20-point per game scorers in the NBA. That's why Wiggins is trash and he was overhyped. But Kyrie did the same thing. What I'm saying, Lo, is allow these guys to take control of their careers. You see the guys who grind and you see the guys pay off, the guys who are talented, like Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, still isn't a great defender. And so what I'm
But definitely has become better.
Yo, at the same ages, you can make comparisons between Kyrie and Wiggins. He didn't shoot phenomenal from three that year. He shot 35%. And so just allow him time, man.
You're looking at his third year. Wiggins is 4 years into his career now. Kyrie at 4 years in his career, while playing next to LeBron and Kevin Love, you know how that's supposed to be a transition year for him. He averaged 22 points on 47% from the field.
Come on, bro. We know LeBron has dimer. We've seen the stats.
But it's not like Kyrie couldn't put up 20 plus points while being efficient as well.
No,
while also giving you 5 assists. And also stop acting like
it's different, Lo.
It's not. LeBron
Who attracts attention on the Timberwolves like LeBron? Who's the guy?
The argument
there
that
you
you're
go.
Having.
So when LeBron has the ball, Before, and he's driving.
Agent, before even that season, you can look at Kyrie Irving. You can clearly tell he was a more efficient scorer than Wiggins was.
He's doing the same exact percentage as Lowe.
No, he's not. Wiggins is shooting.
Just like Wiggins.
Kyrie's first year, 40% from behind the arc. Second year, 39% from behind the arc.
No, you're not. You're looking at 3-point percentages because you're trying to make an argument, and you're only looking at the statistics that support your argument. If you look at his stats, low field goal percentage, there's a year where it drops. And then LeBron gets on that team, and everything is all Gucci because of all the new opportunities it provides, and there's less attention on him. So what I'm saying, you do it all the time, Lo. You did it with
Ingram. And there's less attention on him, Wiggins. And he became a more efficient scorer. As the third option on the team, agent. As a third option on the team, there's no excuse for him to shoot that poor from the field. And also, you're looking at field goal percentage without reckoning.
If fans are complaining that Cat isn't shooting enough field goal attempts and Wiggins is shooting too much, then he's not a third option. It's just that he's being positioned as one. But he's getting about 36, 37 minutes per game, and he's shooting up a decent amount of shots, sometimes 15, sometimes 22. That's not a third option on any team. So getting back to the main point is, you said you understand why he feels that way. I think that transition from your understanding to immediate criticism, even though Kyrie is not the only example, you could look at parallels of other players around the same age who shot inefficient.
Kyrie wasn't inefficient. You have to look at how many three-pointers he's making that's translating to him having a lower field goal percentage. But even if we were removing field goal percentage, Kyrie was a ball handler that was creating for others. This man Wiggins has never even seen two assists. Bro.
I know you remember early in Kyrie's career, his whole story was he kept dealing with injuries, one. And two, that although people expected him to be this phenomenal player, that he didn't have what it took to carry a team. And so that was the whole story. Kyrie didn't really have it.
And those things were not being said about Wiggins 2 or 3 years in his career. Because by his second year, he was already playing next to Karl Anthony Towns. And they still were losing games. And don't get me wrong, if Towns next year doesn't take that jump, I'm going to be here with the exact same energy.
Because Towns also has to... I don't think you are, bro.
Oh, no, I will. No, I will. Because I clearly remember people talking about Towns as he was like supposed to be this next Shaq type of player because how many points, rebounds, and blocks he was recording. Oh, no, I vividly remember that. Oh, don't get me wrong. I'll have that same type of energy. But when you're 4 years into your career, and it's all I got to say, if you feel some type of way about the role that you're on, especially now since Jimmy Butler will miss the remainder of the season, play better. That's all I gotta say. Just play better. Play better. That's it. But at the end of this year, especially heading into the postseason, if Andrew Wiggins is still struggling and if we get into the postseason and he's still looking like a player that's he's underperforming, I'm gonna keep telling it. I'm gonna keep saying this.
I disagree, but I don't want to go in circles, so we'll move on to the next topic, Lo.
What's up? It's Justin from the Driving Dish NBA podcast. When I was in 8th grade, I switched from wearing glasses to contacts because I liked playing the game of basketball, and ever since then, I've had to deal with getting contacts, which takes way too long. You have to sit in the waiting room for a really long time. It always kind of smells weird in there. That all changed when I found SimpleContacts.com. You show them a picture of your prescription. You pick the brand of contacts that you use. You put in your address, and they're on their way. And so much cheaper than going to a doctor every single time you need contacts. Took me about 15 minutes right before I left for work, and we're gonna save you $30 off your first order with them at simplecontacts.com/almighty, or use the enter code almighty at checkout. That's $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/almighty, or enter the code almighty at checkout. Just remember, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. They only do a test that makes sure your contacts are going to give you 20/20 vision. They don't write completely new RXs or examine eye health.
As I was gonna say before you decided to interrupt, there's some two streaks on it's my excuse to bring up the Raptors, but also Portland, both right now on 10 game streaks. As we're recording this, Portland is playing the Cavs in a couple hours. So who knows, the Cavs might actually break their streak, making the Raptors the hottest team. But, Lo, on the last podcast, we talked about Portland. They're still on fire, one. And two, when like they first of all, they have a better record than Cleveland, just to put that in context. I don't know if this is just a moment. I watched a couple of the games just to make sure that this team was really hooping, and they were. And it seems like out of literally what feels like nowhere, the players just decided to step up. And this team is winning games against challenging opponents. And it's surprising me, Lo. Yo, what's the chances they keep it up in the postseason, or is this just a regular season thing?
I'm happy you pointed out the fact that they stepped up, and we're not making excuses for none of these players. So shout out for you for doing that, because hey, I'm not making no excuses for nobody. You're right. They're stepping up, playing better. They're finding ways to win. And that's literally the whole purpose of why you take the floor. So I salute them and your Toronto Raptors team, because they're still winning games as well. The problem with the Portland Trailblazers, though, is that I'm still kind of concerned of how this is going to translate in a postseason. But luckily for them, if they're able to keep one of the top four seeds, then they should have, maybe not, I don't want to say, like, I don't want to say easy, but they should have an easier route to making the second round than they would if they were on a bottom seed, because I feel like home court advantage in the Western Conference between the third and eighth seed is going to be really, really important. And at this moment, the eighth seed is the Utah Jazz, and if I'm not mistaken, they're like 3 or 4 games removed from the third seed. So everything is really, really close. The San Antonio Spurs are still in the playoff hunt as well. So when it comes to the postseason, I will be concerned about how this is going to translate. But right now, you know, Damian Lillard is playing extremely well. And I know it's kind of cliche to say he's underrated or undervalued, but I honestly believe in the beginning of the season, many people were making arguments that they were going to be one of the 6, 7, or 8 seeds. Some people were going as far as saying that they were not even going to make the playoffs because they barely made the playoffs last year. But with the addition of Nurkic on the roster and Dame is just going off over the past 2 months now, it's pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty impressive.
It is. I'm really happy for this team. I remember a few months ago we had talk on the podcast where we were saying Dame went up to the owner and it sounds like he was voicing his concerns about the organization, and we were talking about the inability of that organization to build around them. And almost in the same point you're making about Wiggins, about how you just need to step up, it seems like instead of waiting for someone to arrive, I think he's... Because here's the thing, Lo. I think when you establish yourself as that guy, which I think he's trying to do, especially on this run here and to close out the season, it makes guys really want to play with you in the offseason. Like, if I know Dame is that guy, and I'm like, yo, why don't I team up with Dame? My name is Carmelo Anthony, and we'll see where this takes us. Or my name is Paul George. No.
Paul George.
Just two examples. Whoever it is, right? And Portland... they haven't really brought in any amazing talent unless you consider Evan Turner amazing. And all the talent that they have brought in sometimes, a lot of the times, has been wildly overpaid and unsubstantiated. What's the word here? It was a lack of planning or knowledge involved in the decision making.
Yeah.
Honestly, Lo, at this point, I kind of feel bad for Dame. The team is doing well, but I don't see how he can keep this up and beat a top-tier team like the Houston Rockets or the Golden State Warriors. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters. And so he could continue to play like this, I agree. But at the end of the day, he's going to need somebody, and I'm sure that's why he had that talk with the owners. And so who's that guy going to be? You could say, like, step up all day. You could say it all day long. But at the end of the day, you're going to need to show him some support by bringing him some players. And I don't think they're going to do it, Lo. Not only, first of all, is Portland, like, it's a cold place to live. It's, first of all, like, just think of, like, the accessory stuff, Lo. When you're living in Portland, your flights to any game are going to be a lot longer just because you're way out of the way, whether it's an East team like Boston or it's a Western team like Arizona. It's all going to be long-ass flights, right? 1. 2, I don't know what the tax situation is there, but you think about teams in Texas or in Florida. Or, like, do they have no state income tax, so they're saving 15-20% on the money they make? Like, so there's so many different factors that might play into somebody wanting to go there. So they end up overpaying people, and they're just at that disadvantage. But for the time being, at least, I hope they make it into the second round. I hope they give whoever they play some problems. I hope they can keep it up. But at the end of the day, it's all hope. I don't think anything is going to come of it in the form of a consecutive playoff win, making them to the Western Conference Finals. I doubt it.
Fun fact, though, like you said, over the last 2 months, they've been on fire. Last 20 games, more specifically, Dame has been putting up 30 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, while shooting 46, nearly 47% from the field, 41% from behind the arc, on nearly 10 3-pointers attempts a game, which is crazy. And within the same...
You know what that reminds me of, Lo? Oladipo.
Stop.
And all within, season, actually.
And within that same 20-game stretch, they've only lost 4 games. That's it.
Impressive, man. That's really impressive.
One of which was actually to your Toronto Raptors, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
Dame has been going off, and again, I want to be very, very clear before we move on to this, and you pointed out, to answer your question about them receiving players, I'm more so concerned about how they're going to put players on that team because they're overpaying players such as Evan Turner. They really don't, if I'm not mistaken,
and
they really
Alan
don't.
Crabb too, right?
He was there. Well, Alan Crabb is gone. He's on the Nets now.
No, I'm saying, but they overpaid him and they had to pay an arm and a leg to move him.
If I'm not mistaken, though, the player that they moved to get him is going to be off the books this year. But after this year, they have to pay Nurkic. So they're going to be tied up financially regardless. But another thing that's also interesting. Well, first, like you stated, stepping up. Just step up. Stop making excuses. Go win games, and that's what makes players great in the NBA. At this point, Dame can't complain middle of the season, post trade deadline, that he doesn't have enough help, and like you're not going to get in. Like what you have is what you have. You got to figure out ways to win. And I will always salute players who find a way to win regardless of the numbers that they're putting up. So I salute to Dame. And I think at this point, he's starting to really creep up in the argument of being a top 10 player. Obviously, at this point, he's top 15 at bare minimum. But I think he's really starting to make an argument for him to be a top 10 player. And as much as I love Chris Paul, there's been a few point guards this year who stepped up. And I feel like they surpassed Chris Paul in that point guard position. But the bigger question that I have is, LaMarcus Aldridge played himself low-key. I don't know why LaMarcus thought that it was a cool thing for him to go to San Antonio and try to act like he was the guy. But like, yo, LaMarcus, you looking mad crazy right now. Kawhi goes down. You're still in a really solid system with not a really good supporting cast, but in a system with Popovich. Y'all have been struggling recently. And because LaMarcus all just couldn't understand his role or what it was supposed to be on this Portland team as time continued to progress, as he got older, Dame entered his prime, and they had a really solid supporting cast around them. And on top of that, LaMarcus Aldridge, from my understanding, wasn't willing to adjust for the time period as he was not so openly, he wasn't openly willing to play the center position. However, in today's NBA, that's what he's going to have to do. But more importantly, the fact that he wasn't willing to adjust his game to play with a great player in Damian Lillard and really be a part of what they've been able to build over the last 2 to 3 years since they've lost LaMarcus Aldridge. Yeah, you played yourself, LaMarcus Aldridge. You played yourself because you've definitely fallen off while Dame has entered his prime, and he looks unstoppable right now.
Yeah, he does. And who knows how long he'll be. He's coming back soon, hopefully. No additional word on that. But I remember there was a moment like 5 years ago in the playoffs, Low, where Aldridge scored 40 points on back-to-back games, and everybody in the world like came to the realization, like, yo, he really got it. Like, that's that guy right there. And so to see him move, I almost felt like Portland should start to rebuild or do something, but surprisingly able to salvage things and make a, I don't want to say a run, but that's probably what this is going to end up being. They've made it to the second round, I think only once, right? Since?
Yeah, just once.
Yeah, and it was it was that Damian Lillard game winner that broke the hearts of, I believe, Houston Rockets fans, if I remember correctly.
If I'm not mistaken, that's still the same series where LaMarcus was going off. I think that's all the same series.
Yeah, that might have made sense.
But yeah.
Yo,
and also shout out to CJ too, because he's playing really well in the same 20 game stretch also.
Yo, I want to bring something to your attention that I was just made aware of like a couple days ago. And I knew it existed, but it faded from my memory. Lo, did you know that since the Pistons used the stretch provision on Josh Smith, they're still paying that guy $5 million a year until the 2020 season?
Yeah, I know that. I knew it.
That is crazy. He almost, Like, it's been so long since I heard Josh Smith's name in a relevant basketball conversation. And I remember, I believe when they renegotiated the CBA, I think every team got one stretch provision and one amnesty clause. And so I think early in the first five years of the renegotiated CBA, a lot of people used their amnesty clause. I remember Gilbert went down with an amnesty clause, if I'm not mistaken. And basically, for those who don't know what that is, a team can cut a player from their books and not have to worry about... They'll still have to pay the player, but it won't count on the cap. And so it's almost like a get-out-of-jail-free card. And the stretch provision is more like you cut the player, and instead of paying him his yearly amount, what he's owed, you can stretch it over a longer period of time so it doesn't as negatively affect your cap. And so Josh Smith might be one of the last remaining people who's still getting paid on that provision because of the massive contract they gave him. On one of the most regrettable contracts, man. And you think of a situation, I think the Nets have probably been the only other team to make a worse decision than that signing in a really long time. And that's when they tried to get the Celtics big three to, was it New Jersey or Brooklyn late into their careers. Oh, what a horrible decision. Sometimes you look at some of these general managers and you think like they did so much to get into that position. They probably know what they're doing. And then they make moves like signing Josh Smith for way more than he's worth. And now you're stuck paying him $5 million for the next 3 years. And he's not even playing on your team. And that hits the cap.
He's not what even in the NBA. Forget that. He's not even in the NBA.
He's watching the Pistons play and getting paid $5 million a year, Lo. That's crazy.
Who else is getting paid with a stretch provision?
Who?
Not in the NBA. Ex-All-Star guard, quote-unquote, was supposed to be just as good as Chris Paul in his prime, Deron Williams.
Deron Williams got us with who?
Now guess the team. You got to guess the team that he got it with.
It can't be New Jersey, right?
It is the Nets. Yep, it's the Nets.
Really?
Yes. They, for those who don't know, this man, Deron Williams, has not had a Brooklyn Nets jersey on his back since 2015 when they waived him. And when they waived him, they stretched it all the way out until 2020. $5.5 million a year, not in the NBA anymore. He's going to get paid $5.5 million until he's 36 years old, despite the fact, again, he's not even in the league. Deron Williams, people.
So, because now they're Brooklyn, that compiled with the awful signings they made? Is that what you're telling me, Lo?
The fact that they're still paying him, that's just ridiculous. I mean, like, now it's really dawning on me. Because I thought it was the Mavericks that he was still getting paid with. But no, it's the Nets. The fact that they're still paying him, that's crazy.
I got to double check this so quickly. Yo, you're telling me all this time I thought that they were a horribly managed team because they gave up everything they had to bring Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. And on top of that, they still had this issue, which Brooklyn didn't do, but they had to deal with. Oh, I'm looking at it right now, Lo. That is hilarious.
Hold on, let's also recognize this. In the 2016-2017 season, last year's seasons basically, this man, Deron Williams, was getting paid $9 million from the Dallas Mavericks. Got cut, right? They waived him. Yeah. So they paid him the $9 million. Then he still had his $5.5 million from the Brooklyn Nets that they owed him through this stretch position. And then the Cavaliers signed him to the little minimum, which is $259,000. So in total, despite the fact that, again, he was one of the worst guards in the NBA, especially when he was the Cavs. He was just completely disappointed.
I don't know, but he had some moments. Come on,
Lo. I'll say this. One of the worst starting guards, because I think in Dallas, okay, he started starting the job. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that he was still one of the worst starting guards in the NBA, this man was getting paid nearly, what, $15 million? Like 14.7. That like that's ridiculous.
That's what we call bad management right there.
That's crazy right there. So shout out to Deron Williams, man. Still getting $5.5 million. But also, yeah, Josh Smith is interesting, though. Going back to Josh Smith, it's funny because in today's NBA, if Josh Smith were to play in today's league, people would go crazy for Josh Smith. He was.
I was thinking the opposite. He couldn't really shoot threes efficiently.
That's the one thing that would have been really concerning, though. I will say that. But if he was able to shoot
aside from what his highlight plays, he has that personality like Nick Young, where you definitely get the crowd hyped up for whatever team that's supporting him. I don't know if people go crazy. You're pushing it with that, man.
I'll say this: if he became a better 3-point shooter, people would definitely go crazy because he was a really good defender, underrated defender. Actually, made an all defensive team. In his prime, he was giving you around 15 to 19 points, giving you somewhere around 7 to 10 rebounds, 3 to 4 assists, and giving you a steal and nearly 2 blocks. That's tough. And at 6'9", you're talking about someone who can guard 2 to 3 positions, can switch off most positions in the pick and roll and still stand in front of players or at least kind of push them in a direction. In his prime, Josh Smith was a really, really good player. Like you stated, though, the NBA changed and he wasn't able to knock down the threes that he was supposed to anymore. But he got another opportunity with the Pelicans and it didn't work out for him. But, you know.
As of late, man, Isaiah Thomas is making the case, man. You know, there's rumors that he's a quote unquote sixth man now. And it's not a good look considering I believe this is contract year. But he's been performing pretty well. He's getting a lot more minutes now than he was originally when he went to the Lakers. And maybe that's paying dividends. Maybe it's just a higher usage rate. But aside from a couple of, his 3-point shooting is on and off just looking at the statistics. But his shooting in general, does Isaiah Thomas have a future on the Lakers? Is that a crazy question to ask considering Lonzo and his quote-unquote potential? Which, by the way, I fully expect you to criticize based on how you've been treating Andrew Wiggins 3 years into his career. But anyway, keeping it on topic.
Two different situations. Lonzo is a rookie. Wiggins is 4 years. You keep saying 3 years.
No, I said 3 years later. Anyway, keep going, Lon.
Isaiah Thomas, we said this last podcast, I feel like they should just waive him. Because again, he's getting given the opportunity to play for a contending team. Yeah, I still feel like that because he will be given a better opportunity to play for a contending team, and when he's in that role, he'll get more eyes on him, and people have a better understanding of how good of a player he is.
But his what contending team doesn't already have a point guard? You know,
no, a backup. No, I still feel like he should, you know, kind of put everything aside and just come off the bench for a roster. I think that what's the team? The Wizards. I think the Wizards would die to have a player like Isaiah Thomas coming off the bench for them.
I don't think so at all. But I mean, assuming John Wall has been in and out with injuries.
That's what I'm saying. Having a player like John Wall not there anymore, and I feel like the spacing that they have for that roster with Otto Porter and Bradley Beal on the perimeter, and then you have Morris at the power forward position spacing out the floor. Isaiah Thomas should be able to get some really solid looks in that roster. So I still feel like they should just waive him and he should go to another team. He's had moments though for the Lakers that it's definitely appreciated. But I just don't see what he's going to add to this team. And I don't really think that they're going to keep him after the season's up with anyway, because they definitely want to stay young. And they also have to leave their cap open to add some pieces in the next year or two in free agency. So I don't really see how he even fits with the roster, especially if he's not willing to take that role coming off the bench. So like I said before, and again, I appreciate the numbers that he's putting up. They're definitely leading into some wins, but I just feel like he should be waived.
Well, I think I disagree with you on that one, and I'm sure he does as well. I feel bad for the guy, man. So much disadvantages just physically speaking.
I'm sorry to cut you off. As we say this, I'm looking at something from USA Today, and it's literally Isaiah Thomas saying, It's literally Isaiah Thomas saying, "I'm no sixth man." So
yeah.
So that kind of got your answer right there. If we're talking about him being a starter, obviously that's not going to work with the Lakers. So that's kind of out of the realm of possibility. Now we have to have the conversation of what team he goes to in the offseason, because I don't know how many teams are actually looking for a starting point guard that's coming off.
The Knicks is the only team without a good point guard. They just keep drafting and trading and like they just can't find one.
The Knicks are probably the only team that would be willing to pay for him too.
Yeah, and a ridiculous amount, and then they'll regret it like Joakim Noah. Yo, the quote was, I won't be a sixth man. I just want everyone to know that, like, clear as can be, I'm a two-time All-Star and a starter who has done things that a lot of people...
A two-time All-Star! Oh my God, stop.
And the starter who has done things...
He said that like that was a crazy resume. Oh my God, stop, Isaiah Thomas.
And the starter who has done things that a lot of people in this league haven't done when given that opportunity. But he said he got traded into the situation. There's nothing bad against Luke Walton. There's nothing bad against the Lakers. I'm taking advantage of this opportunity they've given me. And honestly, I think it is an opportunity. It's surprisingly giving him a decent amount of minutes, considering like they're 7-3 in their last 10, though. Lakers aren't doing horrible. And in an era, may I use the word year, where it seems like a plethora of teams are trying to dive deep just so they can get the first pick and land last. Like, I don't know. It's just interesting to me that they're giving him this much minutes. You know, teams like Chicago are going full length to make
sure. The Lakers don't have their pick, so that's the reason why they're not diving.
But at the same time, like, what do you accomplish from Isaiah Thomas playing? You don't develop the young guys. You know he's not going to be there long term. And even if they don't have your picks, like, you don't make the playoffs, first of all, just because of Gobert coming back, Utah Jazz. Like, it just won't happen. Yeah. Plus, San Antonio is ninth right now. Assuming that's going to improve, this is going to be a fight there, and the Lakers aren't even close to it. They would have to go on a Houston Rockets-esque run this late into the season
While also everybody else losing games as well.
Yeah, which won't happen, especially San Antonio, Utah, and the Clippers have been doing really well. So I
agree. I think a huge reason why Isaiah Thomas is on the floor is because I do like the way that we run our offense. Isaiah Thomas on the floor, he's more of a ball handler, facilitator, kind of playmaker. And it kind of gives everyone an understanding of, all right, if we had a ball handler out there like Isaiah Thomas, who's looking more so to score, how would that affect everyone else? How is everyone else kind of reading that? Are they able to understand spacing and ball movement and off ball movement as well? So I don't really mind the fact that he's receiving 27 minutes a game. And again, I don't mind the fact that we're winning games in the process, because it's still just understanding the different type of sets that we can run and having an understanding of how offense needs to be ran. And if you can throw in more type of looks, the better developed some of these players can become. And I don't have a problem with that at all.
Word. All right, Lo, I got a question to ask you, man. Markelle Fultz joined the NBA. Man, it's been I don't think I've ever seen a player get in the NBA and deal with such a unique level of controversy. It's not the generic stuff you think. He gets in the league, changes his jump shot. Everyone looks at him and clowns him because now he's shooting like a goofball. And he's trying to make some strides that way. I guess trying to improve on his fundamentals before worrying about making his shot look sweet or good or hit, whatever the case is, right? But the 76ers article came out saying they were encouraged by the progress made by Markelle Fultz. And I think that because the 76ers have been doing well this season, we almost forget that they have parts of their team that's not even there yet. And I know we talked about in the past between Markelle Fultz and Ben
farts.
Simmons.
Farts! You caught that man on. Farts! Oh my God.
Lo, you got to call. You get what I'm saying. There's still going to be that tension there. When he gets back and he's healthy, what his role on the team is going to be. And considering they almost have doubles of people in specific positions, and of course the veterans that are also going to want to play some minutes, right? I think the 76ers are in a unique position where they can almost trade him and get a lot back, or keep him and try and make him a part of this team's future. But it seems like they're going to be willing to keep him. I'd be surprised if they ended up making a trade, especially because he's injured and there's a lot of risk involved for the other teams trading for him. But if he makes it back, let's say next year, Lo, what do you think is going to happen next for the 76ers?
Bold prediction. They will actually end up trading Markelle Fultz. Markelle Fultz.
Really? You did that, though? You really did that?
On a serious note, I think the move to trade Markelle Fultz is not out of the realm of possibility, simply because this is a roster that has two players that are obviously going to be the cornerstones for the organization moving forward. And Markelle Fultz, even though I'm not saying he's a bust and I'm not trying to write him off. However, even peak Markelle Fultz or whatever we feel like is going to be the best case scenario as him as an individual, I don't necessarily know if that's the greatest fit for this team. Markelle Fultz is a player who is a ball handler, distributor, shot creator, and will hopefully open up the shot for other players. The problem is that Embiid, he's not as great as a three-point shooter as some people made him out to be. Now, he can continue to develop his three-point shot, but he's far from the type of three-point shooter that a lot of people try to make him out to be in his rookie season. And Ben Simmons, he just doesn't shoot a three at all. So if Fultz comes on the floor and he's not a three-point shooter or he's not above average, borderline elite-level three-point shooter, then we're going to have some floor spacing. So that's one. But two, and more importantly, because he's a ball handler, you're now taking the ball out of Simmons' hands. And I just feel like, and I applaud the Philadelphia 76ers for doing this, just allowing Ben Simmons to be the ball handler and allowing him to be the point guard, despite the fact that he's, you know, 6'9", 6'10", or however tall he is. I applaud them for allowing him to just be the primary ball handler and for him to be the point guard. And how that's going to work with him and Markelle Fultz, I don't really see it happening. And because of that, I think they're going to play him a few games here and there and then try to sell him high. And also keep in mind, they're probably still learning from their mistakes of what they made earlier in this process when they had Joel Embiid and Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel, and they lost Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor and got little to nothing for them. Really, they got nothing, basically nothing for those players. So I think
I'd like to think that too, Lo, like that they're going to learn from the fact that Jahlil and Nerlens didn't work out. And had they traded early, they would have got a lot more value for those players. But I'm going to be the one to remind you, Lo, that we had to deal with Brian Colangelo. If there's anything I know about him, and keep in mind,
before
he was the general manager for the Toronto Raptors, he was actually general manager of the year for the Phoenix Suns. So while the Raptors thought, wow, the guy, general manager of the year, Phoenix Suns, did phenomenal. He was there throughout that D'Antoni era with Steve Nash and all. They put him on the team, and it seems that he wasn't able to recreate the same or do anything similar to that for the Raptors. And more importantly, and what's going to be relevant to the 76ers, Lo, is that he wasn't willing to take risks at all. He didn't ever trade Brignani, even though it was becoming abundantly clear to the rest of the league that it should have been done. Not only was he drafting horrible players, but I think his inability or his fear of risks is going to result in what they dealt with in the past. So while it makes sense that he would learn from his mistakes and make a move, especially on a player who, by the way, Lo, probably won't get traded until teams see him in action, right? Because it'd be a huge risk to give up what they're going to expect back for Markelle Fultz without seeing him on the court, because the 76ers have in the past been criticized for hiding evidence. I believe it was with the Jrue Holiday trade that they hid an injury he had and they were fined by the NBA for it. And so we know that's been done before. So Markelle Fultz is coming back. If I'm another team, although I'm excited by the prospect and I assume that I can get him now and develop him on our team, you don't really know what to expect from the 76ers, whether Brian Colangelo is going to improve as a general manager and do his duties, or whether they're going to tell the honest truth, because they could embellish stuff or pretend like, you know, they could exaggerate any situation to try and make a deal. It's his business, right? And they're going to try, and they've done it in the past. So anyway, that's just immediately what I thought when I seen the article. I thought about the situation. I feel bad for the 76ers, Lo, because if it was any experience being a Raptors fan and drafting and sticking with Andrea Bargnani, man, I hope he doesn't mess up what he was set there with, man. It would be a disaster.
Well, I'll say this just to kind of wrap it up. If I were in a situation with the Philadelphia 76ers, I was a general manager or whatever, what I would do is recognize that it may be a problem with Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons on the perimeter and potentially Joel Embiid unable to space the floor. But I would give it a shot. I would definitely kind of figure out what we have there. Play them for about 20, 30 games and see if there's any progress, especially on Fultz's side of him being a shot creator and being able to knock down shots from behind the arc to help them space out the floor. But if it gets to a point where he's taking too many shots away or too many possessions out of Ben Simmons' hands, then I would just continue to keep playing him, but definitely open up the idea to trading him away and try to trade him as high as I possibly can when his, or try to trade him when his value as high as it is, because I don't feel like holding on to Markelle Fultz, if it's not working out, trying to force it to work, that could do more damage and more harm than good for that organization and their growth.
I think a lot of teams, low, believe in their ability to develop players a lot, and so they keep players when otherwise, for us, it just makes sense to move him. Although it's a risk, honestly, I would say the same about Anthony Davis. If I was a Pelicans, I would have traded him years ago. Because not only is he getting injured all the time, but it was at the time where all of the managers on a poll agreed if they were going to start their franchise around any player, it would be this guy. And so when you see that level of hype around a player, I know it's very challenging to tag one of those players. And so when you have them, you're afraid to give it up. Same reason why the Kings didn't want to trade DeMarcus until very late in his career. Like, he's in the middle of his career now. He's been with a garbage organization the entire time, right? So I guess that's just the reality of it. I guess teams have too much faith in their ability to develop guys. And it's not always going to be the case.
And I know it's a different situation. I know you know it's a different situation. But those two organizations, all they really had were Davis and Cousins. The Sixers are actually fine without Fultz. And that's not to say that they can't be better. But it's also saying that they're not depending on him to come on that team and have some type of lasting impact. They will be fine moving forward as Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons being their 1-2 punch for the foreseeable future, as both of them are great defenders. Both of them can give you 20 to 30 points on a night-to-night basis, and both of them are very young. So it's not like there's a rush, one, and two, it's not like there's a need from any type of star caliber player that's on that roster. They have two stars on their roster, and I highly doubt, as great as Markelle Fultz is projected to be, I don't see him being better than those two anyway. So, and on top of that, like, we just got done with Wiggins. Is Fultz willing to accept the role of being the third option on that team? These are all questions that you must ask yourself. And if you're in a situation where you can get someone else on that roster, because there's definitely needs on that team, such as floor spacing, then that's what you got to look for. You know? I was like, yo, what's going on?
Yeah, I saw a clip of LeBron. Sorry, I had to get a little bit hype, man.
What the hell?
You know, every time we record these podcasts, it's usually like right when the games are going on. So we gotta, as stuff is going on, catch up with shit. Lo, we're gonna have to both. I know I'm gonna record a prime game after this, but we have to make sure we catch this Portland-Cleveland game. I think the last relevant game was the Raptors-Houston one. I'm going to try and do a really good job of catching up on all these games, even though, like, this is...
I'm about to say, that's you who don't watch games. I watch games even after...
Don't twist it, Lo. It's just, this is my... You got to understand. Games go on around 7 p.m. Eastern because it's the prime time where people are available to just come back from work. But I'm a YouTuber who's also trying to get in that prime time by uploading my content. So literally exact same time. So I often miss important games, man. You know, sometimes I'll make exceptions for the Raptors. But anyway, I like the late games, bro. It's cool to be on the east side and watch a game like at like midnight. I'm not doing nothing, right? Maybe recording a couple videos. So I like to catch up on those Western Conference versus Western Conference games. Anyway, that's besides the point. It's going to be interesting, Lo. The 76ers, and Brian Colangelo specifically, has an opportunity to royally fuck up what Hinkie has built. And it'll be a real shame. So I hope that's not the case, because I'm not going to lie to you, Lo. Paul George, Embiid, and DeRozan are my favorite players in the league, man.
Whoa. I know we're saying this, but... This man, John Skipper, for people I don't know who John Skipper is the ESPN president. He had to step down for substance abuse.
How is that relevant, Lo?
It's not relevant, but then I looked at the substance because I thought it was just like something like harmless, something like that. This man is doing cocaine. What are you doing, my guy? What are you doing?
That's messed up.
Yo. It is not 1975. Wait, what is he doing?
Or is he just like a founder? Is he an owner? What is he?
He's a president. He's the president.
Oh, so he's that guy up top. Damn.
This is the same person that, if y'all know who Bill Simmons. I'm pretty sure everyone knows who Bill Simmons is. He used to work for ESPN, got fired from the situation or let go or whatever happened, and he's like, John Skipper is like one of the people that Bill Simmons always brings up first when it comes to like the debacle of ESPN and how it's definitely fallen off over the last several seasons.
You know he's going to talk about this then, Lo.
I was about to say, he's definitely about to talk about this.
He's going to say, do you think he was under substance abuse? Do you think he was under the influence when he was making the decision as to whether I leave or... technically, they didn't fire him from ESPN. They just didn't extend his contract. And I guess a lot of articles just called it firing. But it's like when the Raptors didn't extend Lou Williams' contract. They didn't necessarily fire him. He just took his talents elsewhere. And honestly, I'm happy he did. He built the Ringer. I don't really listen to... I don't read articles and shit like that much, but I pay attention to
a lot of stuff. I don't either. I can't... I'm sorry, but like, you know, if anybody out there doing articles, man, cut it out. We in 2018. Cut it out.
Yo, chill. Sometimes, you know, it makes... I'd rather just listen to it in video or audio.
That's what I'm saying, man. Yeah. Just do a podcast, talk about it, or do a video. Like, come on, chill out.
Why? I think Bill Simmons understood that, man. That's why he's dominating the podcast game, man. He got his shit blowing up.
They do articles too. Here's a few quotes.
I mean, he has writers, yeah. But anyway, it makes sense, Lo. Like, when I'm cleaning my house, like, you're not going to read an article while you're cleaning your house.
Exactly.
You can sure play a video or listen to a podcast, right? So.
Exactly. Yo, here's a few quotes from John Skipper on his substance abuse. I don't think I've ate for the last 48 hours.
That's crazy. Nah, you're wilding right now.
That's crazy. So that's how we already starting. I was filled with great regret and tension. My stomach was churning. I wasn't sleeping. I was dependent. I was panicked. But no, I never thought about trying to reverse course. So you just kept doing it? You just kept doing it? Like you got to a point where you weren't eating for 48 hours, you weren't sleeping, and you never thought to yourself, maybe I should stop? Like, Jesus Christ.
You know,
man.
That's like if you're growing 10 pounds a week and you're like, it never occurred to me to think about losing weight. Like, you never considered that as an option, my guy?
That's what I'm saying, yo.
He didn't try at least one time to, like, stop? He's just like, nah, this is really good. I can't stop. What a guy, yo.
Yo, cocaine is a hell of a drug, bro. You gotta be... That's crazy right there. That is crazy. That's crazy.
I'm gonna tune into the next Bill Simmons podcast just to find
out. I'm definitely tuning into that because... That man he's all over the place with that. That don't make no sense whatsoever.
But. And you know what's crazy, Lo? Is he's not the only guy, bro. He's just the guy we recently found out about. There's a lot of guys in these organizations that's on something and like they're strung out. And it's tough to tell like when you see him on TV. But yo, Lo, when you see someone in person, you can immediately tell. Especially if they're on it as you're talking to them or they haven't had it in a while and they're strung out. Either one of the two. But anyway, Lo, I don't even do caffeine, bro. I don't do anything that I could remotely get hooked. Anyway, that's besides the point. Shout out to ESPN, man. Cocaine, Donald Trump referred to them as a failing organization.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I ain't gonna lie. They don't. And I don't even know like who else is worthwhile watching on ESPN anymore. I don't know. I don't know when's the last time.
They got First Take on there, right? Do you watch First Take?
First Take every now and then, but I haven't really watched it as much as I used to watch it. ESPN is kind of dead.
Low. I'm going to link you this tweet. Yo, everyone watching this has already seen LeBron's dunk. But Low's going to see it live and we're going to get his reaction.
Are you talking about Nurkic?
You saw it already?
No. I'm on Reddit and I see the link. So I'm about to click it right now.
Okay, I linked it to you on Skype or you can click that. What do you think about this? It's 10 out of 10 dunk. I can tell you that. Woo! Oh my god.
Yo, first of all, I don't think I give LeBron enough praise. I don't know what Nurkic thought he was doing. That's crazy. Shout out to LeBron.
You know
LeBron,
what
kind of
confidence
Time out. You don't think that he's one of the top five players of all time? Three?
Don't do it, Lo. Come on, man. Now we gotta talk about it again, man. I don't know if he is, man. I'm not saying he is or he isn't. I just want to see where his career goes, and we can make that determination in a few years, right?
I guess. I don't know. I feel like he's done enough. I feel like he's definitely done enough.
I feel like you're objective in your decision saying that. All right, man. Lo, what's the word, man?
Low-key?
Did I tell you about how I met Ben Wallace? Ben Wallace tweeted at me the other day. Yeah, I need to get a word,
yeah,
man.
How did that happen? I saw you was promoting it, and I was like, okay, all right. I see what you're doing, man. But...
Yo, really weird thing. I didn't even know existed. Ben Wallace is like, you know how like athletes, once they finish their career, like they try and find that next thing, which I guess can like be a confusing part in your life. You just finished everything you knew in life was to play basketball, and then like you have to do something else. Ben Wallace's thing is he's helping organize RC car racing. No exaggeration. They have like literal tracks, Lo, and they race RC cars, and like there's like $1,000 or $2,000 prizes at the end, I think. And the people driving these cars get paid like a real like $50,000 type salary for driving the cars. And you tell me all about it. I was like, yo, this is a really weird thing to get into after your career. But whatever, yo, if that's what you enjoy, then that's what you enjoy, right? So we were going back and forth with him for a little bit. And Troyden asked him a question about LeVar Ball, because Troyden has all the BBB gear and he loves talking about that kind of stuff. And immediately, I thought it was a very interesting response. Ben Wallace said, no, I'm not talking. I'm not answering no LeVar Ball questions. And so he changed up his question. He said, all right, what do you think about Lonzo? And Ben Wallace said, and I think a lot of people, especially the old heads, would agree that he's saying Lonzo not only has to take control of his career, but he's saying that LeVar is, he said basketball is not a gimmick, right? He said, you got to protect the brand. And he was going in for at least like 30, 40 seconds. He's like, yo, I'm not trying to say it to be disrespectful. And I just thought it was really interesting that he found LeVar's stuff disrespectful. We got a chance to chat. And I think maybe, at least for me, that was the most interesting thing, at least relative to basketball. By the way, he was banging threes while we were there. We were at the, on the hardwood in the Pistons court, the Little Caesars Arena, or Little Caesars, whatever they call it. And yo, he was shooting threes, but he looked like a stretch big out there. It was crazy. And he looked very different without the fro. Who's he playing? What do you mean?
Like, who was he playing with? Like, it was just like a shoot around?
Nah, he was just shoot around. Yeah, no. He went like one on one with a couple guys, but I didn't really know who they were. And it was more like, you know, those one on ones you do where you're not really trying. Like, nobody's playing defense, but you kind of just throwing shots up. It was one of those. But, yeah, he looks very different without his afro, man. It almost doesn't even look like Ben Wallace. You just know it's Ben Wallace because he's fucking like 6'8 or 6'9, right? He's massive. So he walks in there and you're like, that's an NBA player. Definitely. You can't, if you're 6'10, there's no position you could have in the world. You just have to be an NBA player regardless. At least that's just how I see it. But anyway, it was a very interesting
day. I'll say this. I don't find that it's interesting, but I'm not too surprised by his answer. Because Ben Wallace was an undrafted player, and he was a little suspect in his first 3 or 4 years in the NBA, and a lot of people didn't necessarily know what to do with the 6'9 big man, who, from my understanding, is actually closer to 6'8 than he is a 6'9, and they didn't necessarily know what to do with him, and they didn't understand what type of role that he was going to have on the team. And luckily for him and in the situation he found himself with Detroit Pistons, it really changed his life. I mean, he became one of the better players in NBA history. And I honestly believe that he should be a Hall of Famer. And it's crazy that he's not a Hall of Famer yet. But at bare minimum, one of the league's greatest defenders in NBA history. So at bare minimum, that's what he became in his career. And also one of the better rebounders as well. So I feel like, when you talk about not the best in NBA history? No, yep. That's Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman.
I think they have comparable stats, at least when it comes to.
Oh, they don't. They don't, though. They don't. They don't. And I love Ben Wallace. But boy, I every single time I look at Dennis Rodman.
He's better than Andre Drummond, though, right? By the way, just interrupt.
Oh, yes. As an individual player, he's better than Drummond. I'd rather have Ben Wallace on my team than Drummond.
Not as a player. I'm saying just as a player, we know. But rebounding specifically.
Oh, as a rebounder, yes as well. But Drummond is also a really good rebounder. I don't want to, you know, poo-poo on his rebounding abilities. But it makes sense for him to be very vocal about the idea that basketball is not a gimmick. It's not something that you can kind of just enter the NBA and hope it will thrust your name and catapult your celebrity to a place where you can kind of make a living outside of basketball. Because if you're not a good basketball player, regardless of how captivizing you are as a player, if you're not able to stay on the floor and actually play basketball at an elite level.
Captivizing? I was thinking before, that's not a word. You meant to say captivating. Sorry.
Captivating. Yeah, I gotta stop using big words, especially if I don't know how to pronounce it. I gotta stop doing that. But y'all know what I'm talking about. If you're not good enough, you can't allow your stardom or your celebrity to dictate the type of player that you are. It has to be your game. Because at some point, even though you may be entertaining and people want to watch you, if you're not able to stay on the floor, then no one's not going to be able to know that you're entertaining because you're not going to be seen by the masses. And I think that's something that he gained very early on in his career. And it's something that he's remembered for, a hardworking player that was able to place his name amongst some of the greatest big men the league has ever seen. So it makes sense to why he takes it so serious, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know? I guess there's two schools of thought on it, man. Like, I see it as just entertainment. I think sometimes he pushes. I hate when he imposes on Luke Walton or even on any coach, because I'm like, that's not your role. But I usually see it as entertainment when it comes to LeVar. But in this circumstance, I guess Ben Wallace was into the mind, talking a lot about defending the NBA brand and defending Lonzo's own brand, which you can get a feeling, Lo. Like, he just lets his dad do whatever, regardless of how it impacts what people think about him. Anyway, I don't know about you. I have an Ethiopian parent, Lo. If I ever told my dad to shut up or stop doing something, I'm catching the meanest sandal, bro. He's chucking that sandal immediately.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. Like, what is Lonzo? Like, I understand, like, people, like, none, like, they're trying to give Lonzo some advice, but, like, let's just be honest. Like, you're not, if your dad was acting crazy, like, you're not going to go to your dad and tell him to chill out or to stop talking. Like, you're not going to do that. It's his dad. Like, people are really, like, trying to advise Lonzo to go to his dad and tell him to chill out.
Like, I mean, to a certain extent, you could be like, yo, dad, let me handle this.
Are you going to do that? I mean, you can have a one-on-one with him. And to be honest with you, I feel like LeVar has given him his space. LeVar is not even in a country anymore. He's over in Lithuania. So LeVar is definitely giving him his space. But, like, yeah, in the beginning of the season, people were like, Lonzo needs to have a sit down with his father. Like, man, if you don't shut up, like, what are you talking about? Yeah, what are you talking about, bro? And it'd be the same people who would put him on TV. It'd be the same, like, networks, and it'd be like, ESPN be like, oh, yeah, Lonzo need to really tell his dad to chill out. And I'm like, y'all just had this man, y'all just gave him a platform last week to say crazy stuff. Like, what are you talking about? So I don't know, bro. Like, it's all them. And people knew this before he entered the NBA, so I don't know why people just think that this is supposed to change, but I don't know. LeVar has been overseas. And we you know what's crazy? Like, I applaud this, and I've done this before. We really don't be talking about Lonzo and LeVar like that too much. I know there'd be plenty of podcast people out there who get caught up in the shenanigans. And I ain't talking about no LeVar, man. I agree with you,
the ratings go up is why they get him back. Because it'd literally be like he go on First Take on ESPN. And then the ratings is popping. So ESPN execs all hooked on. I'm going wild. No, but they will say, yo, bring it back. We want that guy right back here on next week's episode of First Take so we can get those ratings again, right? And then literally the exact next episode on whatever's on that network, it'll be like, see, here's the thing. People just keep giving him a platform. It'd be the same network as one show saying this, next show saying that. They're all contradicting one another, I guess. And in the process, ESPN is just sitting there racking up all of the LeVar Ball money. That advertisers are like, yo, they're paying premiums to advertise around that time just because viewership is higher. Just because of the topic they're talking about. So, I mean, I understand why people do it. I just think, you know, for general people, it kind of gets repetitive. But anyway, I guess Troyden was he was a fan. You know, he said he'd bring it up just to see what he thought, you know. And I'm sure they all have opinions. They're allowed to have opinions. Just a lot of them don't voice it. And Ben Wallace had a chance here to speak publicly about it. And I guess he took it. Anyway, that's besides the point. We've seen LeBron annihilate Nurkic's career. When is he going to slow down? Like, what year do you think he won't be able to dunk like that?
Are we about to have this conversation?
No. I'm just saying, like, you know how, like, when Vince Carter dunks now, everyone goes, oh, look at that vintage old school Vince Carter. I'm like, yo, he just dunked. Not everything is vintage or old school or a throwback or Air Canada. Like, wouldn't you think it get to that point where when we see LeBron dunk, we'd be like, oh, wow, LeBron just dunked. That's surprising.
I don't know. I don't see it happening anytime soon. That's the crazy part.
And it's year 15.
Yeah, and it's year 15, which is kind of scary. I look at LeBron and I've said that I believe he can reach 40,000 points by the end of his career.
And which is crazy. But anyway.
Which is crazy. And when I made that video, I was doing a little stretching to get him to 40,000 points because I was making some adjustments here and there, saying that he wasn't going to play 82 games every year. However, 15 years into his career, this season, he looks like he's on pace to play all 82 games. This year in his career, it looks like he's about to average, I think 27 points per game, which is unprecedented. Like, I don't necessarily know when the last time we've seen something like that. And again, he doesn't look like he's slowing down at all. He's still jumping off. I mean, he's not as athletic. Let me be clear here, because I've had this debate with certain people. LeBron, in his first 7 years in Cleveland and where LeBron is at right now, he is not the same athlete. As crazy as it sounds, and he's still
no. Maybe he lost explosiveness, but he's
That's what I mean. I mean, he's still a great player. I'm just talking about as his explosiveness and how quick he was and stuff like that. He's still a great player. Let's not knock that at all. But I'm saying as his explosiveness, his vertical, his leaping game, right? When LeBron first got in the NBA, it was crazy the stuff he used to do when he used to just jump out. That man used to jump out the gym for real, for real. And again, it's not a knock, but I want to be clear, where he's at now is not where he once was. However, where he's at now and where he was in his last year or two in Miami, it's not that much different. To me, it's fairly the same. And the crazy part is people would make arguments saying that his last year or two in Miami, that's where his prime was. He was still one of the elite level defenders. He was still giving you ridiculous stat lines. And so the fact that LeBron has been able to age so well to the point where we're asking ourselves in year 15, when will he slow down? I mean, again, like I said it before, I don't know how you cannot say he's not at least top five, top three greatest players of all time, man.
Lowell, I have an objective for us on the next podcast, which I think is going to be very interesting. I haven't seen it be done before, but I'm sure somebody's done it before. I want to rank the best benches in the NBA. That'd be interesting. A lot of people talk about depth.
As a side note, you're supposed to make a top 10 list. Thank you for reminding me this.
Oh, my God. Yo, why are you bringing this up?
No, because we... how long we been in this podcast?
I didn't get a chance to...
This is the list, perfect man. Time to start it off, because we'll wrap it up after you give us this top 10. So, Agent.
Of all time?
Wasn't... Or I thought no, it, was it just wasn't. It wasn't. It was top 10 in the NBA. That's what it was. It wasn't all time.
Lowell, I need to write it down. I need like 5 minutes to write it down.
Agent, then, we recorded that podcast nearly a week ago.
I didn't immediately finish the podcast and start creating a list, man. I went to sleep, you know?
Agent, no one didn't tell you to do that. That was nearly a week ago, though. You could have written two names down every day.
Relax, it wasn't a week ago, man. Look at this guy embellishing, man.
We recorded like, what, Friday or Saturday?
I don't know when. I lose track of days. I'm a YouTube.
All right, fine. Man. It was every 5 days ago. You still could have wrote two names down per day and got 10 names.
This head ass said two names. Come on, bro. You're treating it like a piece of homework. Like, you sound like a math teacher. Just finish the two math questions a day and you'll finish this. Just do two pages a day and you'll finish. Nobody does that shit. Everyone just does it all at once or not at all. You see what I'm saying? So I got to cop you off a friend here, man. Can I call somebody and ask for some advice?
Who?
I'm playing. I don't need all that shit. Let's change the topic, Lowe. The Raptors are 51-17.
Right? Oh, my God. You had to get to the Raptors.
I know Klay Thompson just got a thumb injury, and Curry's been out, which means they might overtake the Warriors.
Real quick, I just want to ask you this question. If the Warriors are able to keep the second seed in the West, how is Kevin Durant not in the conversation for MVP? Not saying he should win it over Harden.
Yeah.
Not saying she went over Harden, but like if Klay and Curry missed the last, what, 15, 20 games of the regular season, how is he not in the conversation?
That's a good point. I don't think he should be getting it, but I think he should be like top five, right?
Yeah, like why? Because I keep hearing like people saying, oh my God, that team is so stacked. Like if they're out, if they're missing the last 15 or 20 games, the second or third best player, why should he not be in the conversation to win MVP? That doesn't make any sense to me.
You can make an argument that Klay Thompson's injuries, we don't know how long it's going to last, but like next week he could be back. The Curry one might last a little bit, but
I thought it was a broken finger.
I heard it was sprained.
Never mind. Well,
sprained right thumb. He's going to miss.
I don't see them rushing him back to the court though. So, you know,
They said the timetable is by the end of the month. Hopefully, they can get him back. But regardless, I don't think it's enough of a point in this. Like he doesn't have to carry as much because they're not out for long enough. You see what I'm saying? I think is the argument people are going to make. Still, like regardless of how many all stars, superstars he has on his team. Kevin Durant is still, I think, in my opinion, the second best player in the league.
So we got the first and second player on your list.
Oh, my God, man.
Because the first player is obviously LeBron, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to be keeping count.
You're trying to bait me, man. I see you, Lo.
It's not baiting. You're the one who literally said the second greatest player in the NBA.
That's nah, you but you that. Immediately, you did the segue, bro. You tried to strong arm me.
We'll have to segue back into it. I'm going to be keeping a tally of these names. That's all.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Very interesting.
Honestly,
I was going to say best, but I'm a chill.
Also, James Harden should be the unanimous MVP this year.
It should be unanimous, and anybody who votes otherwise should be kicked off the voting. They should never, ever, because they keep changing up the priorities. One year it's about stats, next year it's about stats and winning, and combination is always skewed one way to give it to someone that's not Harden. If he doesn't get it this year, I'm tired of it. All right.
No. I don't think that there's anyone who believes that he's not going to win it
this year.
This year. But. Yeah. I'm going as far as saying that even though we're bringing up Anthony Davis and Dame and KD and DeMar DeRozan, which are, that's all fine. And there's five selections that people are given for MVP, but it should be unanimously across the board. James Harden should win MVP. He should be the unanimous MVP this year.
I agree. I think he should get all the first place votes.
Okay. I want to be clear before we get to that point. James Harden should be the second unanimous MVP. Okay. All right. That's all.
Yo, because I checked, there was an update yesterday. Curry's going to be back next week. Klay Thompson in 2 weeks. So it was not as serious as I think people thought. Okay. But still, I wouldn't be surprised if they kept him out for longer just because they're not in a rush to bring him back unless they want to fight for the first seed, which I honestly don't even think they need. But I think it would be valuable against Houston if it goes to a game seven. But they were only a game and a half back. It's not too bad.
I would go as far as saying that James Harden this year, I mean, I think it's debatable that he now, at least this year, he's unanimously the third greatest player.
James Harden?
Yeah. This year.
Do you mean best or... You mean who's playing the best or who is the best? There's a difference.
Yeah, I'm talking about this year, like for this specific year. Like if we're talking about just pure talent and what he's able to bring to the floor, what we've seen, what he's done to this team for this year, I think it's debatable between him and Curry, but just to give him his props this year, I would say that he's the third best player in this year's season.
So. That's a good question because I'm looking at a picture of Curry while you were saying that. If you had to choose like one guy, because they're pretty similar characters, Lo. I think James Harden can attack the hoop a little bit better, but Curry could shoot the three a little bit better. But they still have strengths in the same areas and weaknesses in the same areas like defense. So while they need guys to compensate for them on the offensive end is where they get their money. If you had to like draft a team and choose between one of these two guys as your first pick, Curry or Harden, just not based on what's happening this year, just as their entire careers, assuming no injuries, of course, I think that'd be a very challenging choice.
And here's the thing. I think this year, what we've seen from Harden has made it a very challenging choice because of his ability to knock down threes, if I'm not mistaken, he's shooting threes at a ridiculous rate. Like, I think his three-point percentage along with the attempts from behind the arc are now at a point where they're similar to what Curry was doing for the last 2 years, especially before Kevin Durant joined the roster. So because he's such a lethal three-point shooter, I don't know if he's at 40% like Curry, but like you said, they have strengths and weaknesses. But because he's able to knock down a three ball, while also get to the lane, draw the foul, and get to the free throw line, while also contributing 9 assists, that's the reason why it's so impressive to me. And I don't think that, I think over the last 2 to 3 years, even though Harden has played really, really well, and there's definitely an argument to be said for him to win the MVP, I would still say over the last 2 or 3 years that Curry was the better player. But this year, what Harden is doing, it is debatable. It is very, very debatable. But again, like I said, I would just, for this, because of this year, I would give Harden his props and put him ahead of Curry right now. And I would indeed, I'd say I probably wouldn't, I would have to see Harden play well in the postseason first. Yeah, I gotta see that. I gotta see that first. I'm not ready to really jump the ledge that far just yet. But I think when we look at what he's doing.
Well, I know you just barely gave Harden the edge, but I think I'll go with Curry. By the way, Harden's shooting a little over 37.7% this year. But the frequency, he shoots 10 threes a game, which is 10 insane.
Threes a game, nearly basically making 4 of them. That's ridiculous.
I would choose Curry given the choice. Below, damn it, I wish I saved a tweet. So a reporter asked D'Antoni a question, and this all ties in. And D'Antoni went off on the reporter. Basically, the reporter said, do you wish that your team would have went inside more? A lot of people think that when the three ball is not hitting, try going inside. But D'Antoni set off. Like, he went on a rant, and he basically gave him all the stats. D'Antoni said he was playing like an idiot earlier in his career. He was coaching like an idiot, and now he's a lot smarter with his decisions that he makes. And basically what he was trying to say was things like an uncontested layup per attempt is 1.7 points. A corner three is 1.3 points. And he was giving this reporter all the numbers, and he basically got down to it, and he said a post-up is the worst shot you can take in basketball, is 0.7. And like, he went off on this huge rampage, and I think it all ties back into this, because you look at the stats in general for the Houston Rockets, they hate taking mid-range shots. They only ever take threes, layups, or they love the corner three. They say it's the best shot in basketball. That's not an uncontested layup. And so it's weird that Harden's ability to play basketball meshes so phenomenally with D'Antoni's philosophy on what is like the highest percentage shots you can take. Now, there's going to be some nights like in the playoffs where everything misses and it's just not on your side, whatever, it happens. And I think in those games, a lot of people will point to the coach or the players and say, this guy choked or those guys can't really do it. And then they'll point to history and be like, James Harden won't win this year because of what happened last year, regardless of the improvements they made, which is the same case they make for a couple other teams around the league. And so I just thought it was...
The Toronto Raptors.
Yes. So I just thought it was a very interesting response that D'Antoni was willing to publicly call himself an idiot for what he was doing in the past, especially because the second he said that, I immediately thought about what you were saying, and you're like, man, yo, the Steve Nash, the D'Antoni Phoenix Suns weren't even that good type stuff.
I've never said that. I've never, ever, ever, ever said that.
You said their stats were exaggerated, which you can make a
fair point for. They are.
Just kind of reminded me of you when I heard D'Antoni go on that rant. Basically, he's saying going in the post is the worst shot in basketball, which is an interesting take.
Okay, I'll say this about D'Antoni. He was ahead of his time. There is no denying that the way that he set up that offense in Phoenix was amazing. He was basically able to break zone defense. And he forced teams to go back to man-to-man. He opened up the floor, and it made it that much easier for everyone on that team to get whatever looks they needed to get. But, and I hope this isn't the case for D'Antoni, and I hope at some point in his career he'll be able to thoroughly understand that it's more than just a number game. Because with the addition of Chris Paul, like you said, even though they don't really shoot mid-range shots, Chris Paul knocks down mid-range shots. Yeah, Chris Paul, nearly 30% of his shots, actually more than 30%, nearly 33% of his shots are from mid-range. So Chris Paul, he actually does knock down the mid-range game. And it's needed in the NBA. Now, the frequency of it is definitely, it's not even debatable at this point. Like, it's definitely nowhere near as frequent as it once was, and I don't think it needs to be. But you have to switch up the looks that you're giving the defense to keep them honest. Because what ended up happening last year, especially when you're defending, when you have a team that's defending you like the Spurs, that's coached by Popovich, that has a player like Kawhi on the roster, they understand your game plan. They thoroughly understand that you're either A, trying to get threes, or B, getting to the lane. And so if you cut out the middleman, which is the mid-range game, and you basically force them inside and make sure you don't foul and give them tough looks inside the paint so they're not making as many, then they're going to be reluctant to start falling back on a three-point shot, and it becomes easier to defend them. I understand what he's saying as, you know, it's just an easy look. And especially when you're dealing with a player like James Harden, that three ball really started flowing, and I know Steve Nash wasn't he's not a scorer, but that was definitely an aspect of Steve Nash's game that he couldn't duplicate at the level of James Harden is right now. So that definitely introduces a whole aspect of basketball that many people were never expecting from a ball handler to do at the pace that James Harden is doing it. So again, all credit to both James Harden and D'Antoni, but it cannot be simplified to numbers, because numbers can be embellished, they can be adjusted, they can be influenced, they can be inflated, and they're situational. And if you're guarding a team that is giving you the mid-range shot, then you got to take what you can get from time to time, because you got to put the numbers on the board. And that's a huge reason why D'Antoni, despite the fact that he's been a really good coach throughout his entire career, he's never beaten Popovich. Popovich has outcoached him every single time in the postseason. Every time.
Interestingly, Popovich goes in the post a lot, especially with LaMarcus Aldridge now, but even in the past with Tim Duncan. So D'Antoni,
well, in the past it was different. I believe it was different because, one, there weren't as many shooters, especially efficient shooters from behind the arc like they are right now. But two,
I mean, just speaking in the last five, I'm not speaking in past decades, in the last 5 years alone.
Okay.
Spurs are a team that consistently go in the post if you look at their shot charts. I just thought it was really interesting. It was an in-depth response that we rarely ever get from coaches who usually just give the, yeah, okay, nah, we tried, we didn't make our shots. Like, you know, the generic responses you end up getting. I don't know what this reporter said to trigger D'Antoni, but D'Antoni made a point and then came back to the point at the end. Almost like it was like a diss track. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. Stop asking stupid questions.
Well, this is how still, I run my he's team. He's still looking for validation.
And I don't think that's what it is.
It's maybe not sad, but he definitely holds grudges. If you heard his Coach of the Year speech last year, he holds grudges. Because it was definitely a lot of people telling him that he ran bad. He didn't know what he was talking about when it comes to basketball. And 10 years later, the whole league is playing a style of game that is very reminiscent of what we saw from the mid-2000s Phoenix Suns. So I do believe that. I don't want to say validation, because I feel like D'Antoni is a person, not even just a coach, is a person that will stick to his guns, and maybe, like you said, recently he's been much more vocal about it, but he definitely stuck to his guns in the past, especially when he was dealing with the Knicks. So maybe validation is the wrong word to choose there, but he's still a person that he holds grudges, like he just does. It's very, very clear that he does. And rightfully so, because he's been right.
Yeah.
To a bigger extent.
Just to outline before we end the podcast how challenging what he did was. He was able to stay relevant for decades now. And there's a lot of coaches in the NBA who can play one way, but once you ask them to switch things up, or now you have this player, basically form your team and your style, your game plan based on your personnel, they don't know how to do that. And so just his ability to adjust, and shout out to the guys like James Harden, who went from shooting guard to ball handler back to shooting guard, and they're like, find a way to adjust, James Harden, you should be able to. And he's done it without, like, not even like a bump in the road. You know, he's still
a ball handler, though. He's still, you know.
But he wasn't getting the usage rate or the assists he was getting last year. But anyway, I feel like that was a good note to end the podcast on. I disagree with what he said about post-ups and percentage and stuff. You could date back in even recent history and find players and teams that use the post and were able to consistently win games. He's right. It is a challenging shot to hit, and 99% of players in the NBA shouldn't attempt them consistently. But there are the few who just find a way to make him hit, like DeRozan did against the Houston Rockets in mid-range, wildly contested. And what Mike D'Antoni will consider a horrible shot is actually what helps seal the game for the Raptors.
I was actually just about to point that out, too. The team that they lost to snap their winning streak was a team that features a player that dominates from mid.
So, but interestingly enough, Dwayne Casey's picked a note from Mike D'Antoni. To start the season, they made it a note to avoid shooting excessive mid-ranges. If you look at the amount of three-point attempts they're taking, it's increased significantly. It's a lot of inside and three. So he's almost picking up a hybrid between what he used to do and what D'Antoni's doing, just because statistically, that's what makes sense. And people like Charles Barkley hear that and go, fucking crazy. Like, stats, stats! Who needs stats?
I agree, but you just can't, you can't eliminate, because you're right, I'm looking at it right now, they're third in three-point attempts right now, and this is the Toronto Raptors in the NBA right now, they're third in three-point attempts. So yeah, I agree, there's definitely aspects of the game of basketball, is how it's developed over the years, that you just can't ignore. You cannot ignore how the NBA has changed over the last several seasons. I just saw something along the lines where 3 years ago, the league average was around 99 points per game for a team on average. Now it's up to like 107. Yeah. Like the NBA is vastly changing every single season. And if you're in denial of the direction that it's heading into, then you will get left behind. And so I'm open for that, but you cannot ignore certain aspects of basketball, especially if that's what the defense is giving you. Because if the defense is giving you a mid-range shot, you have to take it. And you have to have players on your team that are not only willing to take it, but are able to make those shots. Because if not, it makes it that much more easier for the opposing team to defend you. And this is the year for D'Antoni, just like James Harden as well, where he's going to be tested to figure out if he's going to be able to make those on-the-fly adjustments, because that has definitely been a huge knock on D'Antoni as his career has continued, that he just doesn't make adjustments and he sticks to his guns.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%, man. Anyway, we're going to end the note on that. Yo, these guys is pressing me to play Pro-Am, low. I can't even enjoy just talking with my guy Legend, bro. Just talking basketball without being pressed to play Pro-Am, man. Oh my God, my life is so frustrating and also amazing at the same time. Yo, thank you guys for watching the Off-Top Podcast, otherwise known as the Back to
Pod Podcast. Well, highlight player of the pod.
I was going to do that, but I feel like we're already past the time, so I was like, we could hold. Just
real quick, name somebody.
I don't have anybody as a thing. I could name somebody off top. Shout out to my guy CJ Miles, bro. He just put out a tweet earlier saying he hasn't had this much fun playing basketball in a while. Raptors on a 10-game winning streak, and honestly, CJ Miles is a very important piece of that. He takes a lot of contested, ridiculous threes, and sometimes they drop, but relative to Patrick Patterson, woo, whole new world.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ.
I love the guy, man.
Shout out to Julius Randle. Over the last, like, 2 or 3 weeks now, he's been playing ridiculous, consistent, like, 20-point score, grabbing, like, 8 to 10 rebounds. So, yeah, shout out to Julius Randle, bro. He's been doing his thing, man.
All right. And on that note, these guys is fucking bothering me forever to play this game. Low, it's crazy, man. I enjoyed this podcast. I like talking about like not necessarily news, but just like basketball topics that otherwise don't get discussed that I find really interesting. I think we did a lot of that today. It might have been the podcast name, Low. We got to think of some more NBA Street related podcast names. All right.
I guess. AJ.
We'll catch you guys later, yo. Wait. Can I do it, Low?
No, can you please? No, stop. Someone hit me up on Twitter, was like, bro, tell Agent to let you say peace, bro. Tell him.
Somebody hit peace. Me up on Twitter and said, yo, Agent, you didn't say it on the last podcast.
Can I say it? Can I say it, though? Can I say it?
Peace.
You're so... Oh, my God.
We'll get added on that note, man.
Flo here with a really weird word. Buttery. buttery. It's not quite butter. It's more butterish. Or maybe buttery is like butchery or bakery, a shop that sells artisanal butter products. Dig in, America. Now a word that's even more weird. Flotection. Sure, it's not really a word, but it is really good protection for your new home through me and Progressive. No ifs, ands, or butteries about it. Sorry.
Save an average of 17% on car insurance when you bundle home and auto through Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.